Welcome to The Art of the Impossible, a podcast that explores how the design and manufacturing industry can leverage technology, processes, and people to make the impossible possible. I'm Asif Mogul, Director of Market and Industry Development at Autodesk, and each week I'll be joined by industry experts to share the challenges they face and what they're doing to overcome them. From smart products, mass customization, digitization, supply chain, and the convergence of once diverse industries, this podcast is for business leaders who are interested in making things happen. You can subscribe by following us on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. So welcome to episode 6 of the podcast. As we've said many times, that the industry, it tends to be littered with buzzwords and jargon. Digital transformation, industry 4, IoT, etc. You don't have to go very far to find some of this terminology. And some might say that sustainability is also one of those buzzwords that is used a lot, quite rightly so. But is it really understood as clearly as it needs to be? And I think that's what today's episode is about. We're going to talk about how sustainability can help really drive transformation as an organization and what role digital plays in it. Because there is a statistic that says that 80% of a product's environmental impact is incurred in the design stage. And today's guest is really going to talk about how they've been using design thinking to really drive the company goal and vision, which is all around sustainability. So I'd like to introduce my guest for today, Axel Save, who's the Factory Layout and Modeling Engineering Manager at Northvolt. Welcome, Axel.
Hi, Asif. Pleasure to be here.
Great. I'm really looking forward to the discussion with you. So, Axel, we'll kick off. And could you help us understand a little bit more about Northvolt, what the business does, what you make?
So Northvolt is still a fairly young company, founded in 2016, with the simple goal of making the world's greenest batteries and enabling the future of energy, if you're really condensing it down. And basically, we want to take the opportunity of establishing this Swedish and European new industry of green tech, and particularly batteries, mainly for automotive, naturally for EVs, but as well also for the industrial and the general electrification. And I think what's key is that we are a Swedish-based and European-based company, but highly international. And I think that is what is exciting, both from a technical point of view, from a commercial point of view, and also from a cultural point of view. So that is really the soul of Northvolt, this sustainability aspect as well as the international and cultural focus.
Yeah, and can you tell us a bit about what your role in the business?
So since about 3.5 years ago, I'm at Northvolt, working with factory layouting and modeling. So basically, we take all of the requirements that needs to go into the factory, and we play a combination of The Sims and Tetris, trying to put everything together for a holistically good design. And I think this is a very unique thing, where traditionally you are talking about product design and production design and factory design as different silos. But with the tempo that we have, with the technical ambition that we have, that doesn't work. You need to think holistically and see the factory as an inorganic organism where all the parts need to play together. And for that, you need to have a centralized factory design department, which me and my team is part of, and a very pragmatic focus on how to model, how to design, and how to visualize so everyone is in it together. And that is a key thing for me and my team, to make that common baseline, both technically and design-wise.
What's interesting about getting you on this episode is we often talk to companies who their design is really around a physical product. And you've just talked about how factory is this sort of holistic view, but in a kind of certain sense, I guess you're talking about just viewing the factory as a product itself. Would you say that's a fair way to think about it?
Absolutely. And I think that is the key for that. Naturally, Northvolt produces batteries, but my personal product is factories that produces batteries.
Right.
And from the main part of it is called a factory design and blueprint. And this blueprint idea that we have is to really consider the factory as a product and run it as a product design project where you bring all of your requirements and all of your procedures to make it a product that you then can ship to your customers, which is the manufacturing sites that actually need to use this design to produce batteries. And it's, as in any product design, you need to have clear requirements, you need to have a clear goal, you need to have your wearing and tearing and tug of war between all of the stakeholders that has an influence on your product and actually make your customer happy in the end.
Okay, so Axel, we talked earlier about how neither of us are particularly inspired by buzzwords and jargon. And then there's a particular part of your story that kind of really resonated with me, is that Northvolt, the journey that your company's been on isn't really necessarily one of digital transformation. It seems to be much more around innovation. So could you just talk us through that and why innovation first versus digital second?
Now, I would say digital is first, but a transformation implies that you have gone from a non-digital phase to a digital phase. While one of the biggest things I personally enjoy working at Northvolt is that we don't have a legacy. Like, we are a seven-year-old company from the beginning. We can design our products, our factories, our toolbox, our procedures from scratch and really think, how do we want to do it, rather than having decades of baggage. Actually, we have decades of experience in the people that we are bringing in, but the way we set it up allows us to think new and think a bit more visionary, but also, given our timelines and we gotta save the world, really pragmatic and having one eye on the horizon and one eye here and now and on the deliverables allow for a very creative thinking. It really allows for an environment of nothing is sacred of what we're doing here. So what works, what does not work, what do we just scrap and redo, how do we tweak as we go, and literally building the rail as our journey proceeds. I think that's both a blessing and a curse, naturally, to not have the structure, but also be able to build the structure you want as you go.
It sort of like brings to mind some of the sort of people talk about when we have like this sort of startup mentality, you know, there's kind of like this blank sheet of paper, a blank canvas, and you can sort of start anywhere you want, which sounds like you've been in that position. So where exactly did you start in your, because you said transformation, sort of digital first, but transformation follows. Where did you start in your digital journey?
From the beginning, it was very clear. When I recruited into Northvolt, and I think it's absolutely bonkers that the majority of production design in the world happens in 2D. Like, right. Most industries look at the production floor layout on top in a 2D DVG and try to figure out to place everything, which is, in my opinion, absolutely insane when we have procedures of designing the building in 3D and the products in 3D. So why not your production in 3D? So that was really the goal from the beginning when I started them, setting up this central factory layout team. How is this technically achievable? And here we have had a lot of challenges from a strict CAD technical point of view of just taking some parts from the mechanical CAD world in terms of our machines and our fixtures and everything that is on the production floor, and the architectural, civil, MEP part of the facility, and try to make this talk. But also to really set this mindset that you need your process engineer and your material flow engineer and your logistical engineer and all of these people to talk with your architect and your utility engineer and your site coordinators. And we're like, think of this not as a customer and client relationship of someone decides and then hands it over for execution. And so not a serial process, but a parallel process where everyone has a stake to make this common factory achievable and good.
You're talking about sort of like almost like concurrent processes instead of like the linear approach. It's like several parallel tracks that should be able to move, you know, backwards and forwards, but also across each other. It's kind of like a, it's almost like the utopia of product development you're kind of deciding. So how open was the company to, you know, adopt some of these things that you brought on? Was there, you mentioned challenges, but was there any resistance from the organization or the people?
No. And I think that is also one of the best things where, like, if everyone has this mindset that we want to design the best damn factories, we need to have the best possible setups for it. And like everything from like our connected factories and the, like we have a whole department working on the, how to do our internal cloud system to connect all of the machines together with the ERP systems and all of that. And it's always been in the mentality to be very digital, to be almost 100% digital also in a manufacturing context and a product context, which opens a lot of doors when you can start talking about how to actually do it. I think the main thing was then just put this, does the tools allow for it? When you cannot survive in Excel, you cannot survive in a PowerPoint, you cannot survive in a 2D DVG, which tools do we need to have? Can we build by on the market? What do we need to build in-house? And how do we connect that with a new way of running the project? You cannot take your textbook 101 system of building your organization chart. You need to fundamentally think of how do you put together your team, your core team for each design part to make it work together so that the tool does not become a bottleneck, but also so that the people does not become a bottleneck and make all of this work together very, very fast and very, very agile. And naturally, a classic waterfall system where it is very safe. Naturally, if you first design your product and you know exactly what you want, and then you can design your production based on that product. And then when you have designed your production, you can build your house. But frankly, that's too slow for the climate change. Like, we cannot afford that from a strict how many years we have left to save this world, which means that we need to start working parallel. You need to work more with how to design your product in parallel, or at least more in parallel with your production, and then design your factory and your buildings more in parallel with your production. And that is the only way that you can shorten your end-to-end timeline, which is what we need in this environment and in this commercial environment.
Yeah, you're quite right. I mean, the planet can't wait for us to get super innovative and productive. We just have to become super innovative and productive. We don't have time to waste in terms of like long consulting hours. So you mentioned something earlier, Axel, about the approach that you're in a really fortunate position that you can almost like start with a blank sheet of paper. So I'm just imagining some of the other people that might be listening to this episode who probably are running maybe more companies that, you know, probably been around a bit longer, maybe got more established sort of procedures in places, maybe even sort of established silos. How could they even think about adopting some of the things you're talking about? Nothing is sacred. It's kind of like innovating in terms of the process. How might they adopt some of the things that you are talking about?
There are two main things to this. One is from a strict how to run your internal developments. And that is you need to make containers. Actually, if you're building a house of cards, if you poke at one side, it can fall the entire house.
Yeah.
Is that you need to think of what containers do you have in your toolbox? Are you building everything on one central masterpiece of a jack of all trade tool? Yeah, naturally then, if you're poking that jack of all trade tool, you can break something that you have not intended. So what we have done, just from a strict technical toolbox perspective, is to make them containerized and start talking about interfaces. So if you're not very happy with the way you design your pipes for it, okay, then you make sure that you're taking this and you tweak that in a controlled manner and say, as long as you keep within your box, no one cares. As long as you start talking about your interfaces and how you interact with other tools or other departments, then you need to have interface management. So if your toolbox is only caring about development in the piping team with piping tools, well, as long as you don't talk with each other and the users there, it's fine. But as soon as you start wanting to move metadata into your architectural toolbox, then you need to care about the interfaces. What are the key stakeholders? What are the practical file formats and metadata and how to IT-wise do it? But I think the key there is interface management, to really map out, understand who am I influencing and who is my counterpart in it. Who do I need to shake the hand with to do, hey, I want to do this change for it. And have that relationship of both being able to take the risk to do it. Be very open to take a calculated risk to achieve a better end goal.
So there's almost a sense there of like mapping out, I mean, we would call it maybe the value chain, you know, the end-to-end things you need to go through to produce a product, which in your case is a factory. And if I understand you correctly, inside each stage, you're using the term containers. I'm assuming that means it's a collection of tools to get the job done. And inside your box, you could be the fastest possible. But if the minute you leave your box and it takes you five times as long to transfer the information to somebody else, then that doesn't seem to make sense. So I think what you're talking about is mapping out that entire workflow or value chain, understanding the tools, the toolbox in each stage, but then focusing on the interfaces between each stage. Was that correct?
Yes, but I think the key part here is the people. Like you can make sure that your toolbox talks or not talks, so that's a solvable problem. But if your receiving end or your counterpart on the other side of the interface are not willing to discuss the change, it doesn't matter. Because naturally in a handshake you have two parts, and they need for one to be able to enable the possibility to technically receive whatever change you want to do, but also you are poking their daily operations. And they need to be open for being able to see that a change is for the greater good of the holistic design for it, which means that they both parts need to be have the mindset of saying, yeah, let's take a calculated risk of doing this change. And hell, it might even be so that one of you gets a potentially worse situation, but if the total gain for the whole is greater, then it's still a plus for the project and for the company. But you need to have that trust and that dialogue between the stakeholders to make that achievable, to have a conversation to start with. Otherwise, your technical solutions are irrelevant.
So how do you go about, I mean, how did you go about creating that? Sounds like a culture, this culture of trust and openness in Northvolt. Maybe it's already there. Maybe it's part of the recruiting practices, but how did you go about establishing that culture? And then, again, same sort of question, really. If I'm running a company that's been around for, say, 50 to 100 years, and I've got some experienced engineers, some new engineers coming in, just a really diverse set of employees, but people are used to working in their silos, how do you even go about starting that process of creating that culture of trust and openness?
I think you need to start with the bigger. Now, what do we commonly want to achieve? Mm-hmm. Now, as an architect, I am tasked to design the best architectural model. Or as a process engineer, I'm tasked to design the best production. But what are we commonly here to achieve? Yeah, the world's greenest batteries and the best damn factory designs we can achieve for it on the timeline and the budget that the framework has given us. And to really establish this, that production design is a dance. It's something that requires all of us to dance together without stepping too much on each other's toes and talk and understand of how do things that I do influence the things that you do and vice versa. And to just have that common talk and understanding of what are we here to achieve. Yeah, people individually might be used there to get a paycheck, but they're still there in a context of achieving something greater than them as individuals and them as teams for it. And I think that's very, very important to see this common picture and one eye on the horizon and one eye here in the daily operations at all times together.
Okay, wow, there's so much here to kind of unpack. So I suppose a lot of people call it talent or recruiting. Is that something that you think within Northvolt is kind of just built into the recruitment process as you look for these kind of like open-minded people who have that bigger perspective? Or would you say that's developed when people join? What's your experience of that?
No, I think you need to have it from the beginning. Like, you can train technical aspects, but you cannot train certain personality traits. Like, so you need to have a certain personality matrix to begin with. And actually, that is part of the recruitment process, where we put a very high emphasis on cultural fit. Actually, we do our cultural fit assessment before the technical assessment. Yes, because if you are not a cultural fit, your technical capabilities are irrelevant. But what I think is critical is to maintain it. So I think that is an organizational topic. Not to develop, or develop also happens naturally, but key thing is to maintain this goal, this oomph of people who are already driven and are in the organization. And I think it's people need to care. And I personally feel here where in my backgrounds, and I was working for very traditional industries, and I felt like a very little small cog in a very large machinery, and where, frankly, Axel as an individual, no one cared. Like, yes, yeah. Now, of course, I cared about doing a good job, and actually I got recognition for it from my managers and my colleagues, but me in the bigger picture was not relevant as an individual. As a company, you must make sure that all individuals feel that you matter. And I think this is where Northvolt has really found it, at least for me personally, where what I achieve, what I do, what the blood, sweat, and tears that I pour into this common goal matters. Where me as a person can contribute to this common bigger cause, and the mindset of management, the ecosystem of how we run development projects, the forums, to capture voices is caring about the people. So you need people who cares, and you need a structure that cares about people. All right. And it's simple as that. Do I have fun at work? Naturally, not all work is fun, but fundamentally, people need to have fun at work. And that can be as simple as we run meme of the week in our weekly department meetings, just because memes is a funny modern new way of expressing feelings in it. It can be just how do you make sure that your colleagues also are maybe not your best friends, although that also happens, but your friends in a professional context. Because if you work with your friends, you care about your friends, which means that you care about your common everyday business. And that helps the bigger business achieve the targets.
Yeah, there's a really strong cultural aspect coming through from what you're saying. So, you know, we're going to go back to kind of what you've focused on is you came in and you saw how the teams were currently working in a very sort of flat two-dimensional environment, and you thought, okay, let's introduce a change, moving more towards kind of like more three-dimensional. What are some of the benefits that you've seen from taking that approach to date?
The most basic one actually is your factory is in three dimensions. You don't want to hit a pipe that is in your roof. Like, it's very simple why architects and piping designers and everyone has been working in 3D for decades. Like, you see more, but that also means that you can optimize more. You can start thinking in all three possible dimensions. Like, my main currency as a factory designer is square meters and cubic meters. So doesn't mean that if I'm only thinking about my square meters, it means that I can leave a lot of dead spaces that I still need to build and heat and maintain, but it's just useless. So for one, it helps thinking more of density in all three available dimensions that we have in physically. But especially I think it helps, it unlocks a more modern way of thinking of assets. Of it. In the same way as if you have a product assembly, whatever you're producing, and you have your bolts and your nuts and your brackets and your it's an assembly, right? But every part of your assembly has metadata to it. In you have your material specifications, you have perhaps suppliers, you have who designed each component, you have a utility consultant, whatever the case. And your assembly needs to be an accumulation of all of the inbound materials and some more, because assembly has a value in itself. And yeah. I think just going into a 3D and just a more modern way of thinking of your factory design as a product helps this, where your machine, yeah, your architect might just see it as a block that they should just stay out of when they are building their walls. But as a team, you see that this machine has utility requirements. It has maintenance requirements. It has material in and out feeds for it. And different stakeholders might have different value, different aspects of it differently. But all of this needs to be considered together to make the holistic design the best possible. And so I think this to make it 3D is more to make it more thinking as an assembly of requirements more than just being a third dimension, which is fairly basic way of thinking of anything.
I love the way you put it earlier. And I heard it as, look, every cubic meter in a factory, every cubic meter of space is an asset. And I suppose you were able to optimize those assets. And in other words, optimize every cubic meter. So for you and the team, it really drives the kind of like effectiveness and efficiency of what you're doing. How's that shown up in terms of like the benefits to the broader business? Have you noticed anything or seeing anything?
For one, it is a simple cost. Like battery manufacturing is to a large extent done in clean and dry room environments. So it is very controlled, very clean areas. And they are super expensive to maintain. Like you need to filter and dry and maintain every cubic meter of air in your room, which means every cubic meter you can remove is straight up capex and opex that you don't need to care about for it. And then naturally, not every square meter and cubic meter are equally worth. Like a loading bay is not as expensive as a clean and dry room environment, but in general, it requires a mindset of, as a production engineer myself, like there's usually by my colleagues a way of thinking of a building is the building. Just build a bigger building. And you can just have infinite compressed air, and you can have infinite electrical peak loads and whatever it's the case, because it's a building, right? It's 400 meters long. It's ginormous. But if every single machine thinks about that, you're going to oversize your compressors, you're going to oversize your utilities, you're going to oversize your building, which costs. And on the scale of a gigafactory, it is astronomical amount of money. That you really need to think for. So I think that's also where the personal, to be very transparent in the design, and have this, where the process engineer needs to understand that when they ask for more compressed air, they are influencing their colleague in utilities, who for one perhaps need to redo their design because they need to scale up some compressor, but it also hits the bottom line of the design project. And in the same way goes for the architect, who cannot just demand unreasonable machine designs. And to really create this, my aim is not to make everyone happy as a factory layouter, but it is to make, to find a design that is holistically accepted and where everyone understands why everyone needed to do the compromises that they were for, that was needed to make the whole come together. That's a mindset. That's have nothing to do with technical. It's just a mindset to understand. Yeah. I need to budge a bit and you need to budge a bit and we all need to tangle together to make this commercially viable and a good technical solution.
And I presume that then the other benefit would be to your kind of customers who are in receipt of these factories, if they're getting better performing factories. You talked about using less material, energy, resources, and of course that has a cost benefit, but also it has a sustainability impact as well. We literally use less resources. So going back to your goal of sustainability, but I can imagine the impact of your customers must be positive. So how have they reacted to this kind of just different way of working, to this holistically acceptable high-performing factories?
I received a very positive notice on it. Naturally, of course, a good business case is always appreciated by a customer, naturally. But I think it's more of understanding that it's a timeline issue. Like electrification, especially, is on a stopwatch where every single automotive OEM needs to be first in market with new electrical EV versions of their designs. The grid and industrial applications are expanding like crazy. It is how fast can we convert and who is first across the finishing line and this next milestone. And by doing this, we can reduce the timeline of the entire product from that the customer says, I want batteries, to designing the battery, to planning the production, to signing the contract, and then start building the factory and first sell out. That is where the real value is, where we can do a product on a record time. As we are a 7-year-old company that now is in production in our first gigafactory and are in well on our way on multiple factories in parallel. And that's where the real value is, to prove that there's a better way, a faster way of doing things without hitting, without just throwing money at a problem and still be very commercially competitive by thinking in a new way, especially in the European context where we naturally have another commercial reality compared to the more traditional Asian-based battery manufacturers. We have certain benefits. Our green energy in northern Sweden is absolutely key to our green thinking, but it doesn't actually have the European labor market, European supply chain market, have other challenges and possibilities compared to the traditional way of doing batteries, which need to be accounted for.
So you've already started using digital to transform what's going on in Northvolt. You've made some amazing progress in a relatively short space of time. Without giving away anything commercially sensitive, what's kind of next for you? What's next for Northvolt in its journey towards sustainability through digital?
I think we have established ourselves. Like we have grown to over 5,000 people from 120 nationalities. We have started production. We started to understand what mess ups we did in the first design, and we start to now make them even better in the next one. Just last week, we announced a new gigafactory in Canada. Like we have now come to the point where we have multiple gigafactory projects running across the world, and where I see next step for us to prove that our first gigafactory was not a custom one-off, to prove that the scalability in our fundamentals are there, to be able to, every factory should be better. Every factory should be faster, and to see that we generally talk in my department about keep, tweak, and leap in the factory design, where you say to your first generation, you say, what was good? And what do we keep moving forward? Oh, yeah. And then you have the tweaks. What was solid, but needs or can be improved? And then you have fundamental leaps, where you either from a new product requirement or a process technology or just a big screw up needs to throw away something and think new and make the next leap in your design. And having that mindset, I think now next for us as a company with my goggles and my department as well is to prove that we are not an inflated startup. We are a new base industry and can prove that you can be commercially very competitive and also care about the planet and be sustainable. And I think that is very, very exciting. I think it is will be super difficult, actually, everything new is, but it is very, very exciting.
It sounds absolutely exciting, and I can't wait to sort of like follow the progress of Northvolt as you continue to tweak and leap. I like that. So we're going to get to sort of the, I suppose, the last bit of the podcast is where we ask you two questions. One is about advice you would give to any of the leader. And then the other one is if there's a specific book or something you're reading that you would recommend other people read. So I'm now sort of giving you advance notice of that. So you have, maybe you have a little bit of time to think. So it's not like, oh, a surprise. If you think that, let's say I'm a leader of a design and manufacturing business, and I say to you, wow, I'm really inspired by your story, Axel. I'd love to design more sustainability into my business. What advice would you give me?
I would really think of what are the heavy hitters. Like, it's so easy to go into a full sustainability. Everything's going to be done by wooden panels on your building, and everyone's going to bike around your factory. Like, to have this very almost greenwashy aspect of your sustainability. That is not where the planet goes to shit, to be very frank. It is in the energy mix. It is in your material choices. It is in the heavy hitters, but you also need to think, where do I place myself? Manufacturing has never been more connected to as it is today. We can move supply chains across the world. We can move people across the world, as proven by Northvolt. You can move your competence and your engineering, but you can't move your energy grid as easily. You cannot move your main production. So the site selection is critical. Think, what is valuable for it? And from a sustainability point of view, it's grid access. We picked our German factory outside of Hamburg specifically because it is the region in Germany with the biggest, easiest access to green power. It is as simple as that. In a very energy intensive factory, you need to, if you have shit in, you have shit out. And it puts into perspective what matters. What is, if you really care about sustainability, what matters? Are you just comfortable because you always have been a Swedish company to always be in Sweden, to own the higher Swedes? No, absolutely not. You care about Sweden because what Sweden can benefit, aka hydropower and green energy. But Sweden has no history of battery manufacturing. We have no expertise in it. So we remove people to Sweden to enable it. So I think that would be the key thing. Really, what can you impact and what can you not impact? And most things are movable, but some things are not.
Okay, so identify those heavy hitters, or in other words, things that, or levers, or things you can impact and do something about. And then the second question is, we like to ask everybody, is there a book or a podcast or something you're listening to or reading that you would recommend to other leaders? Obviously, you don't have to say this podcast. There are others out there. But is there a book or a podcast that you would recommend other leaders who are exploring the idea of designing in sustainability into their process that they read or listen to?
From a production engineer, I take a lot from is it Goldratt, in the chain aspects of how to think of the weakest link in your chain, or imagine like production engineering 101. So for those aspects, this is nothing new, but it really thinks on when you think holistically, like you can have the best material flow in the world in your factory, but if your maintenance is not achievable, then your factory's gonna break. You might have the best machines, but if your people cannot have a decent lunch break because you have misthought about your pantry design and placement of people flows, your factory's gonna fail. And I think to really think about this weakest link in your chain is the key to think of what is your bottleneck, just strictly in your value chain, but especially thinking holistically of what am I willing to compromise on, and what is, how do I make everything even enough for it? Otherwise, I would generally think that production design and factory design has a lot to learn about from software development. There's a million way of doing Scrum and a million ways of doing agile development that people are way better than me to explain. But this mindset of what's the features we want to enable and having this general direction and small piece of like one step at a time, and as long as you move in the general direction, that's fine. You don't need to have your 7-year Gantt schedule planned in advance. That's not how you run fast. That's not how you deal with complications, unforeseen aspects of your design. So I really think to dive into the mentality of software development and taking that into both hardware development, but especially factory design development, puts perspectives of what should I care about today? And what is just, it's going to change anyway in 3 weeks' time. So it's not bang for the buck to solve everything now, because that's just waste of engineering hours. So generally thinking of influences from software development into factory design, I think is very valuable for just unlocking some aspects of your mindset.
Fantastic. Thank you, Axel. So now I've tried to try and summarize what I think I've learned from my conversation with you today. So you get to score me out of 10 by being back in school. So I think if we're trying to design sustainability into our organizations, which I guess is what our episode today is really all about, what's clear to me, you absolutely have to have a North Star. And yours, for example, was enabling the future of energy, the greenest batteries with the best factories. Okay, you have to have that kind of North Star, which, you know, even as I say it now, kind of gets you a bit emotional and sort of. And then you need to identify what you call the heavy hitters. In other words, what can we, within our sphere of influence, do about it? What's beyond our control and what's within our control? And then start to think about what those things are that are within your control and apply this other thing that you talked about in terms of like nothing is sacred, which I really liked. So we might have been doing X for 15 years, but does that mean X is now the right thing to do? So don't kind of like hang on to your past successes or the past ways of doing it. So have that North Star, identify the heavy hitters, bring the attitude of nothing is sacred. And then the thing I picked up from you really strongly was then empower your people and the culture of the organization. So you bring people together to map out these kind of core values and what the common benefits are. Maybe even getting people to say, I might only get a sort of a 10% benefit to me personally, but the company and our objective gets a 30% benefit. That's still progress. Then when it comes to technologies, then, all right, think about these sort of toolboxes of like kits of tools that will help you do what you need to do, but then focus more effectively on the connectors between the two so you can finally get that holistic approach. And then once you get that up and running, continue to ask yourself, what do we keep, what do we tweak, and what's the leap we need to make? Now, would you say that's going to summarize what we've talked about?
I think so. A solid 8 out of 10 at the very least.
8 out of 10. Well, what would make it a 10?
I think you need to think about, I like to talk about solvable problems and not solvable problems.
Right.
Where for most things in the mindset of, we have a lot of problems in a factory design. You need to solve it. But to keep going, to not get stuck. And that has with the people mindset and with the toolbox and the infrastructure. But you always need to think about, is this a solvable problem? And if it is a solvable problem, do I need to solve it now? And if it is a non-solvable problem, then you are hit the blocker and you need to find a new path. But to always have this, never get stuck.
Right.
Never, ever get stuck. To always think, do I need to solve this now? If not, is it worth doing now? And we really think about solvable and non-solvable problems. And always think of that helps the mindset keep fresh and it helps you keep going. I think that is, it makes everything easier, especially in this
Great.
Technical frontier area where we are. No one has done this before. So then we are breaking the ground as we go, and then you just need to stumble your way up until you're running. And we are running.
Fantastic. So I'm happy with an 8 out of 10, but I know what I need to do to make it a 10 out of 10. So I hope, as you've been listening to this episode, I really hope there's something that's inspired you, an idea, a concept, an approach that Axel has talked about that you might want to try inside your business, particularly on the idea of designing in sustainability to your organization potentially using digital to do that. I want to thank my guest today, Axel Save from Northvolt. Thank you, Axel. It's been absolutely fantastic to speak with you today.
It has been amazing. Thank you for having me, Asif.
It's a pleasure. And thank you for listening. And we'll speak to you again on the next episode.